Isle Royale National Park is an island in Lake Superior. On that island live wolves and moose, their populations rising and falling together for generations. Now the wolves are in trouble. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Rolf Peterson has been studying the wolves of Isle Royale for nearly 40 years. I'll talk with him today about what he's learned from the wolves. We'll also talk about human relationships with wolves through time and the new chapter we're living now as wolves in many places are taken off the endangered species list. I'll also talk with Ron Eckhoff of Cumming, Iowa, who's been volunteering with the research effort for more than 20 years. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. Earlier this month, Wolf 832, the most recognized and beloved wolf of Yellowstone Park, was shot by a hunter, legally. That announcement was met with sadness by some. The renewed opportunity to hunt wolves in many states in the Union has been met with a great deal of enthusiasm by others. Today, we're going to examine our changing relationship with these beautiful predators, and we're going to start our conversation on an island in Lake Superior. Isle Royale National Park is home to wolves and moose. Their populations have been rising and falling together for generations, and these populations have been studied for 54 years. Rolf Peterson, a research professor at Michigan Technological University, has been part of that research for nearly 40 years. Hello, Rolf.
Good morning.
Thank you I'm doing great. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you.
Isle Royale National Park is a place that is well known to some, but not to many others. So let's start by talking about the island. This is an island in the middle of Lake Superior. Describe it for me.
Well, it's about 210 square miles, so it's a big island. There are no roads there. It's crossed by hiking trails. And so access is very limited, and it's perhaps the least visited national park in the lower 48 states. And it's dominated by, the ecology of the island is dominated by moose for sure. And moose have been managed by wolves for the last 60 years very, very successfully. So, in fact, wolves have retooled the moose population, producing increased body size in these moose and definitely a healthier herd as a result.
How did the moose and the wolves get to Isle Royale?
Well, moose, we don't know any of the details, but moose probably swam there initially about 100 years ago, early in the 1900s, and they found a predator-free environment, so their numbers just went up without limit until in fact, they died in a catastrophic die-off in 1934 in a severe winter. And then so this boom-bust cycle threatened to repeat itself, and that was brought to an end by the arrival of wolves in the late 1940s. At least some of the boom-bust was brought to an end. So wolves got there across the ice probably in the late 40s.
All right, and then this is pretty far out in Lake Superior, so that had to be a significant cold, harsh winter to be able to freeze enough of the lake to create an ice bridge.
Well, that's the way winters used to be. In fact, even in the 60s, when the study was in its early years, ice bridges formed almost every winter. And now it's about 1 year out of 10.
So now the possibility that more wolves could come to the island that way is very small, right?
Yeah, and it's we did see in 1997 evidence of a wolf coming from Canada, and that wolf brought in new genetics for this new gene combinations for this very isolated and inbred population, and that meant a renewed population. So the arrival of new wolves is pretty critical to long-term sustainability.
As I mentioned, you have been involved in this research for nearly 40 years. How did you get involved?
Oh, initially as a graduate student. The study was based at Purdue University and was begun by a Purdue professor, Durward Allen. So I was Allen's last graduate student on the project. And then he retired and turned it over to me in the 70s, and we've continued it from Michigan Tech University ever since.
What was it about the island that grabbed you? Because you have committed your entire career to this island and these wolves and these moose.
Well, I never intended to do that, but that's the way it ended up. But the island was attractive for me, as most of the visitors that come there, for its isolation and its wilderness character. And then to have wolves and moose isolated there created this ideal research opportunity. So it became increasingly fascinating the longer I was around.
The island, as you mentioned, is large, and if you visit the island, you're not likely to see wolves. How have you been studying them all these years?
The three most important things we do each year is count the wolves, count the moose, and determine the kill rates of wolves. And we do all that in the wintertime from a small airplane. And so we're there continuously for a couple months in the winter with a plane and a pilot, and we just fly whenever the weather allows us. And then in addition to the winter work, we involve the public in field crews of our own to scour the island in the summer looking for moose bones, skeletons of moose that have died. And that's another important source of information.
And we'll talk more about that in a moment with one of the volunteers who's been working with you for many years. He'll join our conversation in a couple of minutes. Can you give me sort of a long-term picture of the wolf population on the island? When you first got involved, how many wolves were there?
I don't even remember. It would have been about 25. That's the average. And then in my first years, we had a string of severe winters. The moose population was reduced. Wolves went way up. In fact, they eventually reached the highest density ever seen anywhere in the world. And that kept the moose population down. So it seemed to be a switch from the earlier years of the study, which was sort of a balanced situation, to one of tremendous fluctuation. But even with those fluctuations, moose numbers were not getting up to the point where they would have if wolves had not been there. So wolves definitely kept a lid on their numbers. And that was actually revealed by accident in the 80s when a disease, canine parvovirus, entered the picture, probably introduced by an illegal dog. And the wolf population crashed, and then the moose population just took off and again reached very, very high levels to the point where they died catastrophically in 1996.
And parvovirus it's something that most dogs, if they are in homes in the United States, they can get a shot to prevent them from getting parvovirus. But if a dog or another canine, like a wolf or a coyote, gets parvo, that's usually a deadly disease for them,
it
right?
It certainly can be deadly, and it was a brand new mutant virus that showed up in 1997 and got to Isle Royale apparently in 1981 and killed all the pups and most of the adults.
How do you think it got there?
Well, there was a dog, and I've learned this many, many years later, there was a dog from Chicago that was brought to the island and met another dog from Duluth, and the Duluth dog went back home and died 3 days later of parvovirus. And that's probably how the disease got to Isle Royale, at least one of the ways it could have gotten.
But at that point, dogs weren't allowed on the island, and they're not allowed on the island now, right?
That's true, but it was a fairly new rule back in the early 80s and probably wasn't enforced with the rigor that it is today.
That incident was nearly impossible to recover from for the wolf population on the island, right?
Oh, it meant everything that followed was a historical result of what happened in the 80s. So, yeah, we're still living in the echo of that parvovirus outbreak now because of the rapid increase in moose and then the age structure. You know, the baby boom, basically, that resulted in the moose population, that is all playing out even today and affects the wolf population because wolves feed almost entirely on calves and old moose. So the age structure of moose matters to wolves.
Give me a picture of the wolf population today.
Well, our most recent information is the most recent February survey, and there were only 9 wolves in the population, and that's the lowest level we've ever seen. We now know, after the summer field work, that the population would have been 12, which is still quite low, but 3 of the wolves died after going into an abandoned mine shaft dating from the 19th century. So that took 25% of the population. So that reduced it to a pretty precarious level. And that's where we are as far as we know right now. And we won't confirm all the current status until next month.
Are the 9 wolves that are on the island now all part of one pack, or do they still represent more than one pack?
No, last winter there were 6 wolves in one pack and 2 wolves in another newly formed duo, potentially reproducing pair, and then a single wolf to make up the 9.
And how many females that could bear young do you have on the island, or do you know that?
Well, we have at least 2 females in the 2012 population. And one of them is now radio collared. The fate of the other one is really unknown. And that was based on just our field observations, and we're just now getting the results from genetic analyses of the 2012 population that we generate from DNA contained in wolf droppings, wolf scats that we pick up. It takes months to analyze it, but. So we expect a final answer on exactly how many females and who they are and so forth from that genetic data. So it takes a while to get the final figure.
But at this point in time, this wolf population is on the brink of extinction.
Oh, for sure, yeah. Anytime a population is reduced to 10 or so, they got about a 50-50 chance of going extinct. Just because of a random roll of the dice for sex ratio. You know, the number of males or females that's present might get skewed by just bad luck.
We're going to take a short break here, and we'll return in a moment. I'm talking to Rolf O. Peterson. He's a research professor at Michigan Technological University, and he's been leading the research of wolves and moose on Isle Royal in Lake Superior for nearly 40 years. We'll continue our conversation in a moment. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Today we're talking about wolves. There have been a lot of wolf populations that have been growing around the nation for many years. In a number of states now, the wolves have been taken off the endangered species list. There have actually been hunting seasons opened up on wolves in many areas. And it was an incident in a hunting season just a couple of weeks ago that made us think about having this conversation when Wolf 82, one of the beloved wolves of Yellowstone National Park, was shot by a hunter. We'll talk more about that a little later on. Right now, we're talking about the wolf and moose populations on Isle Royal National Park in Lake Superior. With me is Rolf Peterson. He's a research professor at Michigan Technological University. He's been part of that research effort for nearly 40 years, and the research has been going on for 54 years on these populations, which is really a remarkable longitudinal study. And I also want to welcome to the conversation now Ron Eckhoff of Cumming, Iowa. He is a volunteer who has been going to Isle Royal for nearly 20 years to help count the moose bones during the summer months. Hello, Ron.
Good morning.
Thank you so
Hi,
much
Ron.
For being here.
Glad to be here.
Ron, tell me about the first time you went to Isle Royal.
The first time I went to Isle Royal was 1989, and I was a real greenhorn as far as any backpacking experience or knowing anything about moose or wolves, but went with a great leader and three other volunteers and had a good experience. Actually, looking back on it, did much better than I would expect we would have that first trip.
What made you want to go in the first place?
Well, I grew up in Michigan. I was aware Isle Ryle was there. I was aware, I think, that there was a study there. And my wife happened to see an Earthwatch catalog at a doctor's office and brought some information home, began to investigate, and it sounded kind of interesting.
And when you spent that first week on the island, what did you do?
We hiked off-trail looking for moose bones, and we found the bones from 7 moose that were collectible, which is pretty good for an August trip.
And Rolf, you've been depending on volunteers like Ron for many years to help you find these moose bones and moose carcasses. What can you learn from these finds?
Oh, the bones are the major way that we track the moose over time. And in fact, although we count moose every year from aircraft, our best numbers come eventually from reconstructing the population from these dead moose. Because we not only look for bones, we try to estimate when the animals died. And if we can be sure what year they died and how old they were, then we know that moose has been in the population for a certain period of time. And you can literally add up all those moose that are known to be in the population and through some fairly complicated math, convert it to a reconstructed population size. So, and then it helps us understand fluctuations in the health of the population. The body size of the population, everything kind of depends on the nutrition of mothers and their young.
And how many volunteers do you have every summer?
Oh, it varies a lot, but in the last few years, it's been about 40 to 50 different people, quite a few from Iowa, and Ron is our ranking member.
Well, and Ron, for people who are thinking, okay, hiking in the woods looking for moose bones, maybe you can give us a little better description, because Isle Royale is not an easy place to hike.
No, we hike off trail. We start with a pack. Rolf and his wife try to keep our packs of our personal gear as light as possible, but we start with a pack of 40 to 50 pounds, hike off trail through sometimes pretty difficult hiking and sometimes fairly easy. The other thing to say about Isle Ryle is it's a series of ridges running the length of the island with swamps in between the ridges and sometimes halfway up the ridges. So you're hiking through swamps at times. As we use up our food and fuel, if we're successful, we're adding weight to our packs with moose bones. So if we have a good trip, we end up with a heavier pack at the end than we do at the beginning.
And when we say volunteers, you're actually volunteers who sponsor your own journey. You pay to volunteer on the island to make this possible.
Right.
What made you go back after that first year, Ron?
Well, I found it fascinating the first year, and actually I didn't go back until 3 years later. I was working at that time, and it takes pretty close, since it's a long ways from Iowa, it takes almost 2 weeks of time by the time you go up and go out to the island and spend a week out there and get back home. So I didn't go back for 3 years, but I found it fascinating the first time, found it more fascinating the second time. 2 years later, I went back again, and that time I had Doug Smith as a leader, who has been out at Yellowstone ever since. And then starting in 96 with the huge die-off of moose, it was really fascinating, and I was totally hooked and have gone back every year since then.
And have you found yourself doing research, doing reading about wolves and moose and all of this study through the rest of the year?
Well, yeah, I have accumulated most of the books. I've printed off all the annual reports of the project that are available on the website. So I've read just about everything about the Isle Ryle wolves and moose, some of it two or three or four times, and kept in close contact with Rolf. And so it continues to be fascinating.
Have you ever seen a wolf on the island?
Two-time. One time had about a one-second glimpse of a wolf. That was in the very early spring. And, of course, other than for the winter study, humans are not on the island for over 6 months during the winter. So when we show up again in the spring, the wolves, I assume, are a little curious about what's going on. So one time had about a one-second view. And another time from a long distance, we could see some wolves far, far away.
Do you hear the wolves when you're on the island?
On two or three occasions, I've heard wolves howl. But we see fresh wolf footprints with some regularity, and certainly see fresh scat and old scat. So we see evidence of the wolves.
So it's interesting to me that, I mean, clearly you're a wolf enthusiast. Has it ever frustrated you that being on the island and doing this important research, you haven't gotten to get closer to them?
No. I find the moose, you know, is fascinating. The wolf, I mean, it's the whole thing of the dynamics. But
you do get to see a lot of moose when you're on the island, right?
Well, sometimes we see a number of moose. I've had a couple of trips and we did not see any live moose. I've had trips where we've seen quite a number of moose, and some trips and we saw just two or three, but see enough to be pretty interesting.
So when you share your experiences with other people, what do you want them to know about Isle Royale and these wolves?
I think just learning about predator-prey relationships, learning about what maybe some of it means in terms of humans and how we use our resources.
Give me an example.
I think there are things in life that are unpredictable, and the way things have happened on Isle Royale have been pretty unpredictable, and those unpredictable things in life, whether it's hurricanes or winter storms or asteroids hitting the Earth, change things.
Rolf, as you've been studying these wolves for nearly 40 years, you have gotten a chance to see more of the wolves. You've gotten a chance to follow the progress of individuals over time. Do you feel like you kind of get to know some of the individual wolves?
In some cases, and especially that's true when we put a radio collar on a wolf, because then you follow the same wolf year after year, and you know who it is, and you know something about that individual. Otherwise, if they're not radio collared, unless they look very distinctive, which is pretty rare, you don't have an immediate sense of who you're looking at. Now we track them genetically, but there's still a disconnect between seeing a wolf and then months later learning about, you know, which wolves survived and which didn't. But if they're radio collared, you do get to know them pretty well.
Can you tell me about an individual wolf that you followed over time?
Well, actually, the most spectacular wolf, the candidates for that title have been uncollared. In one case, it was a male, I think I mentioned, that came from Canada in 1997, and he breathed new genetic life into the population and basically kept it going for another 15 years. And he was large. It was a big wolf. He turned white when he got old, and we'd never seen that before. And he was just spectacularly successful at reproducing. We learned a lot from that animal, and we never did radio collar because that requires us to live capture the animal, and he was just too smart. I think he'd learned on the mainland about what people are capable of doing, and he eluded us completely. But if we ever find his bones, we'll be able to identify him.
And you know a lot about the genetic makeup of the wolves on the island, because this has been a fairly closed population.
Yeah, it was founded by a female in the late 40s, and no new females, as far as we know, have come since that time. And there have been one female founder and maybe two or three male founders. including this one that came in 1997. So it's a closed population, and it's the most inbred wolf population that we know of. And the spectacular success of this immigrant male in 97 demonstrated to us that, wow, there really are some problems here associated with long-term inbreeding, and he solved them. But he was so successful that now everybody is his descendant.
And, and it starts again.
They're going back up the inbreeding ladder again.
When you find a wolf's bones, how can you identify that wolf? If you found this male's bones, how would you know it was him?
Oh, it would have to be from bone DNA.
And you have his DNA?
No. Well, we do from scats that we picked up.
So you could match that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Amazing.
So it is. It's really remarkable. As this population has dwindled to 9 and stands on the brink of extinction, and of course you've mentioned that there have been significant problems because of inbreeding in this wolf population, what prevents you from bringing another wolf or two wolves onto the island to breathe new life into the population?
Well, that is a possible response, and that would be a management move that the National Park Service would have to direct. And so they're now mobilizing to consider the options for the future, and one of them would be, consideration of bringing in a new wolf or two or a pack or whatever is deemed to be the most appropriate management move. But first they have to decide if wolves are going to be maintained on the island in that manner. And that's a pretty important debate within the Park Service.
And where do you stand on it?
Oh, I've faced wolf declines in the past, especially in the early 90s when the population had dipped down to 12 wolves and sort of got stuck there. And at that point, I had to think through this whole issue, and my conclusion then and then my conclusion now is that as long as there are moose at Isle Royal, there should be wolves there. And if we have to prop them up every 50 years, that's not too intrusive, even as in a wilderness national park, because wolves are so important in maintaining a healthy moose population and keeping a lid on moose density so that they don't overwhelm the whole island, as they're capable of doing.
Do you think that's something that you could make happen?
Well, I don't direct the National Park Service, but certainly they should be informed by the best science that's available, and that's my job, is to make sure we do produce the best information on the population and the risks of extinction and what happens if there are no wolves. And, of course, the world is changing for moose, too, and moose are challenged by climate change from a variety of directions. Because of shorter winters, white-tailed deer are doing better. I'm speaking of the mainland now. White-tailed deer range is moving farther north into moose range, and that's causing real health troubles for moose. And then their moose are directly affected by summer heat and even winter heat. So it's not, moose aren't able to thrive the way they used to, but Isle Royal, so far at least, is free of white-tailed deer. So it's a much simpler situation, and moose seem to have considerable increase or potential even now.
Ron, what do you think should happen on Isle Royal?
Well, I haven't given it all the detailed thought that Rolf has, although I've read his book where he talks about this, and I guess I would come down on the same side as he does. It seems like it makes sense if there are moose there, to there should be wolves there. You're going to have significant problem if you have moose without wolves there.
Ron, thank you so much for talking with us today.
You bet.
Are you going to be on Isle Royal again this summer?
I expect to be back in May.
We're counting on him.
Wonderful. Ron Eckhoff, from Cumming, Iowa. He is a volunteer who's been volunteering on Isle Royal to hike through the backwoods and up the ridges and through the swamps to search for moose bones and carcasses so that they can understand how the wolves and the moose are interacting through the years. He's been doing that for more than 20 years. And Rolf Peterson, we're going to take a short break. And then as we come back, I want to broaden the conversation to talk not just about the wolves on Isle Royal, but wolves in the rest of the United States as
sure.
well. All right. Rolf Peterson is a research scientist at Michigan Technological University in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. He's been studying the wolves and the moose on Isle Royal National Park for nearly 40 years. You're welcome to join our conversation as well with your questions and your thoughts. The number to call is 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe, and today we're talking about wolves in the United States. My guest is Rolf O. Peterson. He's a research professor at Michigan Technological University, and he's been studying the wolves of Isle Royal National Park for nearly 40 years, and this is a unique population. We've spent all of the hour so far talking about this population. They are on an island in Lake Superior, and it's a very small genetic pool. They've been living in balance or partially in balance with the moose population on the island for many years and have given researchers really an unprecedented opportunity to study wolves. And Rolf, when you first started studying the wolves on Isle Royal, there weren't very many other places that you could study wolves, right?
No. In fact, Isle Royal at that point was the only national park with wolves outside of Alaska. And now there are several national parks and non-park areas with wolves. So they've actually staged a remarkable recovery during the last half of the 20th century.
Did you ever think you were going to see that happen?
No, I didn't. So I'm living in Upper Michigan, and I really never expected to see wolves recover in this state at all.
What is the wolf population like in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, on the mainland?
Oh, there's about 700 wolves in Upper Michigan, and about the same number in Wisconsin, and then wolves in Minnesota, where they were never completely wiped out, increased from a few hundred in the 1950s to about 3,000 or so today.
I think that humans have always had a fascination with wolves. When you look at literature through time, there's so much written about wolves. There's so much wolf lore. And although people living in this past century really haven't had a lot of opportunities to see wolves or interact with wolves, I think that this fascination endures. Why do you think humans have such a fascination with wolves?
Well, there's several reasons. I think one is that they're very much like people in terms of family orientation and devotion to their young and so forth. But they're a social carnivore, that lives in family groups, much like people. And the other main thread of human interest is the competition that wolves have challenged us with, especially after we invented domestic animals about 8,000 to 10,000 years ago. In that process, we removed a lot of the protective behavior that wolves found so challenging. So, you know, we invented sheep and goats and cattle, and wolves have found those to be fairly easy to kill ever since. So we've been at odds over competition with wolves for thousands of years.
So we've made the animals that we depend on for our livelihoods far more vulnerable to them.
Oh, for sure. And then there have been, especially in Europe and Asia, people have been killed by wolves. much to a much greater extent historically than here in North America. And the reasons for that is probably the use of children as shepherds in the old days in Europe and Asia, and also the prevalence of rabies in wolves seems to be much higher in Europe and Asia than it is today in North America. So in North America, the wolf, you know, today is relatively safe from the human safety standpoint.
Well, I was just going to ask you that. Are and I think that along with the fascination, because we have all of these stories and all of this lore, and as children we're really taught to fear wolves through fairy tales and all kinds of other stories, are wolves a danger to human beings?
Oh, I don't regard them as terribly dangerous. No, any wild animal is potentially dangerous, but I'd be far more worried about a moose than I would a wolf. Because they watch people very carefully, and from my experience, they're generally, wolves in the wild, they're terrified of people.
Do you think that our two species are linked in some way?
Almost certainly, because we invented the dog, of course, maybe 15,000 years ago in what is now China, and that came from a previous association with wolves. So we essentially took wolves out of the wild and created this dog that would serve our needs a little more closely. But the change in appearance towards the dog, something distinct from wolves, seemed to coincide with the invention of agriculture. Before that, it was hunting and gathering was the major human way of making a living, and just like wolves. And so it's suspected that for tens of thousands of years before dog became identified, humans and wolves still hunted in the same areas, sometimes stole each other's kills. People could have taken wolves from dens. That's very easy to do, and raised them for their own purposes. And that's probably how dogs were eventually developed.
So we have a long, long history with wolves.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, and we don't know much about the very earliest association, but I wonder if there isn't something in the brain of current wolves that retains some legacy of that early association, because they do look at people as something quite different from another prey animal, for example.
You're welcome to join our conversation. We're talking about wolves in the United States today. Rolf O. Peterson is a research professor at Michigan Technological University and really one of the world's leading experts on wolves. Sean is on the line in Ladora at 866-780-9100. Hi, Sean.
Hi, Charity.
Hi, what's your question?
Hey, Rolf, I know you're mostly talking about wolves today, but I had a question for you about moose. If wolves go extinct on Isle Royale and they aren't reintroduced by the Park Service, will you keep studying the moose? And if so, what will you be looking for?
Well, I would be interested in seeing what happens, but the reality is that the science opportunity would evaporate, and therefore the funding that comes to study wolves and moose wouldn't be there. So I'm not really sure it'd be possible to follow the moose very carefully.
Sounds good.
All right,
well,
Sean,
thank you for the answer.
Yeah, Sean, thank you so much for your call. And again, you can join our conversation at 866-780-9100. So, Rolf, as wolf populations in Michigan and elsewhere around the country have grown, human beings are starting to have to learn how to live with wolves again. And this is creating some anxiety, and it's creating some conflict. What have you observed as we're starting to try to do this over again?
Well, as wolves were introduced into the Northern Rockies in the mid-90s and have proliferated, that was no surprise at all. And there's 1,500-some wolves scattered around Montana, Wyoming, and Idaho. That's not a surprise at all. The controversies with domestic animal raising were anticipated, and those have largely been solved through intensive control of wolves by government agents of animals that were killing livestock have been killed right from the beginning. And so the issue that has become dominant in people's thinking is competition over wild prey. You know, for decades and generations, people got used to elk hunting and deer hunting and so forth without any wolves. And wolves are a very capable hunter, and they can compete for wild game with people that considered the game to be theirs. So we're having trouble sharing, and that seems to be driving the anti-wolf sentiment in the West. And that's a bit disappointing. The rhetoric is a bit disappointing because it's still based on hatred of wolves. Our management of the animal hasn't gotten over our built-in hatred, appears. So in the Midwest now, it's very new. Hunting seasons on wolves are quite new, as they are in the Northern Rockies. So this year, for the first time, wolves are hunted in Wisconsin and Minnesota. I guess we're finding that modern hunters are pretty successful at killing wolves. That's something we've only been able to speculate about.
Right, they're filling their quotas very quickly.
It seems to be, yeah, more quickly than what managers might have expected. And you see, again, the rhetoric seems to be based on hatred for the most part, which is disappointing.
And these hunting seasons on wolves, this is a sport for hunters. They're not eating wolves. This is not hunting for meat. This is considered to be sport.
Yeah, yeah. And if there's any utilization at all, it would be perhaps of the pelt or taxidermy mounts or something like that.
There is a dichotomy, though. You talk about our sort of ingrained hatred of the wolves, fear of the wolves, the ranchers fearing wolves. But there is another side to this as well. There is a quite vocal group of people who, as they've seen wolves come back, have been very excited and fought getting them taken off the endangered species list in many of these states. Because, of course, losing that endangered title also means that they lose the protection. And now we see these hunting seasons. So there is a division. There are people who really want to see these large predators as part of our landscape.
Oh, for sure. And that proportion of the population presumably is larger than it was 50 years ago when it was about the last time wolves were legally hunted in the Midwest. So, I think the polarity on this issue is probably greater than it used to be. And people, you know, not only want to have a chance of seeing one, but it living in wolf country, even if you never see wolves, is different, and hunters appreciate that. They realize that if you're out hunting deer and there's wolves about or cougars as well as black bears, the whole place feels different.
Mm-hmm. Valerie's on the line from St. Paul, Minnesota. Hello, Valerie.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. So I fall on the line of I can't believe that we have hunting seasons for wolves. But with that aside, what I really want to know from you is, how does a hunting season on wolves disrupt the pack?
I would say as long as hunting is regulated carefully, what happens is that pack sizes are reduced as individuals get picked off. And there tends to be openings then that form for wolves that would normally disperse from their families. And packs, as they get smaller, may contract their territory size. So there's openings on the landscape for additional packs. And I've got one to illustrate this, one perfect example from Alaska in a population I was studying in the 70s. We started out with 20 wolves in a pack. Hunting seasons were opened up. 3 years later, we had 22 wolves in the same area, but we'd gone from one reproducing female to three. And so their reproductive rate simply increased. We ended up with the same number of wolves in the end. So what you have is a population with more turnover, a higher reproductive rate, and that's pretty clear. What What also might happen, though, is you get younger animals that aren't quite as experienced, that maybe don't understand people quite as well. And so there's, yeah, that's a potential for changing their wolf-human dynamic. I don't know that they would create more problems, but young animals have to figure out the landscape, and so they're going to be exploring everything. Includes cities. I mean, they can walk right through towns.
Right.
And until they figure out where they can live, they'll go anywhere.
Valerie, thank you so much for your call. And Robert's on the line next from Clear Lake. Hi, Robert.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
Hi, Rolf. It's Rob down in Iowa. Hey, I just thought maybe you want to comment on the speculation of what the general public's opinion is on reintroduction to wolves to Isle Royale.
Oh, yeah, good to hear from you, Rob. There are issues that relate to wilderness character, and Isle Royale is, among all the national parks, sort of unique because we've kept our hands off the place. There aren't any adjacent lands or land use issues, so it's fairly easy to keep our hands off of Isle Royale, and that's an important value. So the non-intervention issue would argue against just kind of jumping in whenever you want to solve problems. And then there's the ecosystem health issue, which would suggest that we should, and that's one that resonates with me particularly, having seen what moose can do when they're overabundant, it's important, I think, to keep a lid on that population. So that would suggest that wolves should be there whether you have to keep them there propped up every now and then or not. So those are the main issues, I think, that seem to come to the top of the heap.
Rob, thank you so much for your call, and we only have a couple of minutes left. Rolf, what was your reaction when you heard about Wolf 832, this female alpha from Yellowstone National Park getting shot in a hunting season?
Well, it's certainly unfortunate from the science standpoint. I mean, I've been through this before where you go to huge lengths and huge expense to get a radio collar on an animal, and that's really critical for maintaining, for getting information on those wolves, whether you're counting them or trying to follow their life history. And then they just get picked off in the blink of an eye. So there's a substantial public investment represented by those wolves, and this particular wolf, as it turned out, was known to thousands of people who observe wolves in Yellowstone. So there was that added public impact. People knew this particular animal. I don't actually know this wolf at all, but I know what the loss represents to people trying to understand wolves and their prey in Yellowstone.
Rolf, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Rolf Peterson is a research professor at Michigan Technological University. He's been studying the wolves of Isle Royale National Park for nearly 40 years. Talk of Iowa was produced by Dennis Reese, Emily Woodbury, and Sarah Bowden. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Production assistance today from Allison Sullivan, with technical support from John Pemble. You can send us email anytime. We love to hear from you. Talk of Iowa at iowapublicradio.org. I'm Charity Nebbe. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. So high.